Information Management and Technology will come to order. Today's agenda is a public hearing on consolidation of state computing and network infrastructure. And do we have an order?
We just have one person signed up. Do you want to sign?
Thank you. And the first to speak, Mike, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Fries, Deputy State Chief Information Officer. And I'm here today to talk with you about the Computing and Networking Infrastructure Consolidation Project, also known as CNIC. And it occurred to me in my previous appearance before this committee, I was able to touch on a few of the key aspects of the CNIC program. I'd like to give you a little bit more background on it today and proactively deal with some issues and concerns that you may have or that you may be hearing about. So let's start with why are we doing the project to begin with. The primary objectives of the CNIC project are to reduce costs while maintaining or improving service levels, and those seemingly competing goals we believe can be achieved for reasons that I'll describe a little bit further on. Also to improve the risk posture of the state with respect to both the ability to recover from a disaster, business continuity, cybersecurity risk, and to position the state really to move in the future, to put in place an information technology platform that allows the state to meet its current and future needs more effectively. And one of the things that's exacerbating that, creating a sense of urgency, is this sustained financial crisis that we have that's been with us for some time, that will continue to be with us for the foreseeable future. We have cut at an agency by agency basis over the course of the last few biennium, and those kinds of cuts are not sustainable. So we need to look at changing the business model. And what we're talking about with this program is adding an enterprise component to what's primarily an agency-centric business model. The way that agencies are structured and created, they're created to serve specific public policy objectives, and often they have their own administrative infrastructure, including information technology. So what we're looking at is a way to do that more efficiently to meet common needs. In approaching this project, one of the concepts we're driving into this is we want to use a best practice called shared services. And over time, anyone who's been with a large organization sees this sort of collapsing and expanding of centralization and decentralization. We centralize typically because things become too costly to perform in small units. We centralize to achieve economies of scale, but sometimes we centralize and that central organization loses its connection to the agencies and to the organizations that are dependent on it for service, and there's a trend then to decentralize. What shared services recognizes is that there's a critical governance model, and that the service provider really has to meet the business needs of the agencies that it's there to serve. So we've created a governance model that puts the agency directors who are participating in this project in the driver's seat, and their technology leaders, the CIOs, who function as a steering committee for this project. We want to be able to determine whether, in fact, we do the project and to what degree we do it based on a compelling business case. The business case contains financial elements, so there are cost savings. It contains other elements like risk mitigation and the ability to maintain or improve services. So that's what a business case looks like, and I'll talk about that in a minute, too. And also to successfully plan and execute by blending two key bodies of knowledge that we have. One is the resident body of knowledge that our agency technical staff have about their agency's business requirements and the technology configurations that are unique to that agency. And we're bringing in a contractor who has a body of knowledge and experience in consolidating data centers and introducing new technologies. So we need to blend both of those things together effectively to produce a successful project, and that's what we're doing right now. I mentioned the governing board is comprised of the agency directors who are participating in the project, and it really is responsible for major milestone review, making policy and business decisions, because, again, we don't want the technology organization making the policy and business decisions for the agencies. The agency CIOs serve as a steering committee for the project, and they will have an ongoing role and governance as the data center, the consolidated data center emerges, and additional groups of subject matter experts in the realm of finance, human resources, facilities, and other areas advise that steering committee and governing board for those kinds of specific issues. We're not asking agency heads or CIOs to do anything different than they do today within their own organization. What we're saying, though, is that we have two responsibilities. We have a responsibility to the agency and one to the enterprise for those areas where we can collaborate and consolidate and achieve economies of scale. We want them to take an enterprise view and work with other agency directors and CIOs to come up with common solutions to common problems. The fifth page has a list of the agencies and the representatives that are participating in the project. And the sixth page is a high-level overview of the project. We started the project last year, and it started with a top-down assessment, basically an inventory and assessment of existing assets and the cost, the staff that operate them, and the cost associated with running them. And that produces really a form of statistical analysis, if you will, that determines what the financial business case is. We take a look at what it costs us to operate today. We compare that to industry benchmarks, and the difference between those two costs is what the savings potential range is. And that's what the preliminary business case was about. The primary decision as to whether we would go forward at that point was, one, could we achieve a significant operating cost reduction, and two, could we maintain or improve service levels? Because, again, we don't want to save money by compromising service. We did produce a business case, and that business case is compelling. And it allows us to do, by consolidating, we're able to achieve savings, correct some deficiencies, and mitigate risks which we discovered in the inventory and analysis process, position ourselves more effectively for the future, and demonstrate accountability. The governing board, the 12 agency heads participating in this process, reviewed the recommendations, the business case and the recommendations of the finance committee, and recommended to the governor that we proceed with this project. Okay. The initial business case, I should stress, was very conservative. We took a conservative approach to begin with, because what we don't want to do is set an unrealistic target and something that can't be achieved. And more conservative assumptions were applied to that business case. And what the initial business case indicates is that there are at least $5 million annual statewide operating cost reduction. And again, quite conservative. We can recover that cost in less than 60 months, which is the COP financing window, and certificates of participation are what are being used as a financing vehicle for the one-time transition costs here. And then those savings go on forever after, once you've achieved return on investment. Again, the analysis assumed the most conservative scenarios. But there are some other things, and irrespective of cost, I would still be here talking with you today about doing this project and why it's a good idea, because there are some things that we cannot achieve individually today because of the scale at which we operate. You know, when I last appeared before this committee, I talked about the fact that even our largest data centers, by industry standards, aren't very large. So by consolidating, we're able to achieve some economies of scale that allow us to do things like operate around the clock cost effectively, that allow us to deploy tools and processes that are much more efficient and effective, and it allows our people to be much more productive, and allows us to have managed service levels. It also allows us to make the state's computing and networking resources more secure, deploy better and more reliable technology, and improve our ability to recover from disaster. I believe when I last appeared before this committee, we talked about the fact that we don't have uniform, well-tested disaster recovery plans or business continuity plans throughout state government, and this positions us to be able to go after those things. And then finally, it lays a foundation. If you use the analogy again of building a building, we've got to start with the foundation, pour the cement, and this gives us a foundation on which we can do some additional things, positions us for additional consolidation opportunities, greater economies of scale, and to go after some other things like system and data integration and standardization. The final thing, and we were keenly aware of this as we did this project, that it would be subject to a great deal of scrutiny, both public and within state government. And we need to be able to demonstrate that, and as state government leaders, we can proactively work effectively on these enterprise strategies, not just within our own organizations, but collaboratively across jurisdictional boundaries and agency lines, overcome some institutional barriers to change, and resolve the complex business and technical issues. And there are a number of complex business and technical issues with respect to funding streams and so on, but they're not insurmountable obstacles. They're just complex problems to solve. that we can produce the same or better service at lower cost. And we're probably one of the few, this may be one of the few times in your legislative career that you'll have somebody come before you and say, look, we want to save money. And in the process of saving money, we want to actually improve things. We want to make them better. And we can be accountable to taxpayers so that we can begin to demonstrate the value for the tax dollars that are expended in this area. Well, the governor accepted the governing board's recommendation and directed us to proceed with implementation planning, but he also gave us another direction. He was very clear and explicit about this. He said, be more aggressive. Be as aggressive as you can prudently be with this project to achieve the maximum savings. And there are really two ways that you can go about doing that. One way is to accelerate the pace of the project to the degree it's prudent to do so. And what that does is really move the goalposts closer. So it shortens the return on investment period, allows you to recover your one-time cost to transition from where we are today to where we need to be, and allows you to begin generating savings sooner. The other way is you take a look at what's in scope, and you increase the scope to include things that could contribute to that business case that would produce additional economies of scale that increases the overall savings target. We went through a process working with the governing board and the steering committee to create a stage zero. Normally in a project, you would not have a stage zero, but the governor's direction caused us to go back and revisit where we were with the project. And stage zero is about the global agency specific scope reset process. So where before, what was in scope would have ended at the point at which our wide area network connects to the agency. It is now expanded to what we call the wall plate, or where the agency's computers plug into the wall in their local area network, and that's a fairly substantial increase. That scope reset, and we are working through the revised business case, will result in a substantially improved final business case, and that was the objective, again, of the stage zero. So we've completed stage zero. We're in the what we call architecture design stage now, and this is where we blend those two bodies of knowledge. Our technical staff are working on committees with our contractor and with our project management staff, and the first step is designing basically where we're going to go. What does the organization look like? What are the technical standards? What's the environment? And that happens through the first 3 months of this year. We'll then begin what we call detailed design. And this nails down the strategy, the sequencing, whether, for instance, we would go agency by agency, whether we might look at consolidating platforms such as mainframes first, or whether we would have a mixed strategy, and lays out the management plans, the template for approaching the detailed lift plan for each specific agency or consolidation plan for each agency. Then we get into implementation planning, and this is an agency-specific exercise. So for each agency, we would complete that entire process, working with those agencies' technical staff and leadership, and then implementation. And that the entire project is laid out on page 14. And you can see, you get a sense for basically what not only what the scheduling looks like, but what the workload looks like. Because the largest three agencies participating contribute the most to the business case at this point, about 90%, and that may change somewhat with the scope reset, but the initial business case was about 90% dependent on those large three. The bulk of the workload is also associated with those first three consolidations. Those are currently scheduled to be completed in the June-July 2006 timeframe. At that point, we build capacity to take on some of the follow-on initiatives I talked about earlier that Scenic positions us to be able to go after. And I've put a list of just some examples of those on page 15. These have not been run through an analysis, with one exception, the one at the bottom. But if you look at industry standards for these kinds of consolidation projects, you can expect to see these kinds of savings. Because Oregon state government tends to be highly fragmented in some of these areas, we would probably be toward the higher end of the spectrum in terms of saving opportunity there. And I wanted to take a minute to talk about why you may be hearing some concerns about this project. There are a number of reasons, but I think the primary reason is that what we're doing is a large discontinuous change project. It is not something that we undertake in the normal course of business. It's not about just continuous improvement. It's about substantially changing the way in which we perform this function in state government. And this consolidation initiative challenges the state's dominant default business model, which is, again, agency-centric, because that's the way agencies are designed. Shared services, this concept we've introduced to ensure that the centralized service remains responsive to the agencies that it's supposed to be there to support, is a relatively new concept. So we're still grappling with how does that work and what is the governance model. Agency staff understandably have concerns and fears about loss of direct control. If I can control the service, if it's under my management structure, I can determine to some degree what the resourcing is and how to resolve priorities and conflicts. And we have to now do that collectively across the enterprise and take into account the needs of 12 and more agencies as more and more people come on board. And people have concerns about their careers. I mean, they signed up for a specific agency to work at a specific job, and now that model is changing because we're consolidating this function. So those kinds of things are understandable. These kinds of change processes are difficult even for organizations that are very adept at change. And I would venture to say that government institutions aren't necessarily very adept at change, and we struggle with those kinds of things. And not everybody loves change either. It's not something that we all necessarily embrace. Now, what I'd like to say in conclusion is that there's a few key takeaways, I think, from this discussion. One is that we can't stay with the computing and networking infrastructure we have today. It's unsustainable financially and from a number of other perspectives, and this project is about replacing that and doing it in the most aggressive way prudently possible. Our consolidated infrastructure is going to be more cost-effective and will help us mitigate, frankly, some unacceptable risks, some of which you have been briefed on in the realm of cybersecurity, but also in the realm of disaster recovery, business continuity. Those things are increasingly important as we become increasingly dependent on information technology infrastructure. Shared service is an important concept, and this is something that, to the degree we're successful doing this, it may have applicability to other areas. Certainly the governance model, the Scenic Governing Board, has been very effective at moving the project to where it is today, and governing board members and the governor recognize the potential of that approach for dealing with other cross-jurisdictional, multi-agency types of issues and problems and opportunities. And finally, I think the key to pulling something like this off, to doing it successfully and in the least disruptive way possible, is clear and consistent leadership. And we have received very clear and consistent leadership from the governor's office. This is really his initiative. The agency directors and the CIOs who have been participating in the steering committee and the governing board have provided good leadership for their agencies and collectively for this project. And we need the same thing from the legislature as well in terms of going forward, clear and consistent message and support. That's not to say that we shouldn't examine these kinds of things very closely, but it's very important, too, that we don't send mixed messages about whether it's a good idea, whether we're going forward, and constantly revisiting decisions that have already been made and issues that have already been resolved. And that concludes my prepared testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mike. Do you have any questions?
I just have a quick question.
Yeah. Representative Worth.
My name is Cheryl. Can you remind me, the last time you testified, I asked what percentage of the overall savings would come from consolidation or reduction of FTE. And could you give me, I forget the percentage you told me, what it would, you're estimating it would amount to, but given the $5 million annual statewide operating cost reduction, that's an ongoing operating cost reduction, so is that any of that personnel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, yes, it is. And the very preliminary business case, which was actually more than $5 million, we were looking at as much as 70% would come from personnel cost reductions. That is probably not the case in the revised business case, but we'll be able to provide that information as we vet that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for the Department of Administrative Services?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Cole.
How's Don doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummel, Don is doing much better. He's actually making it through entire days now at work. As you know, he injured himself during the ice storm, so he's recovering quickly. He'll be ready for Ways and Means later this week.
Okay. That was my question.
One of the things that I would ask, Mike, is this is the second time we've heard from you, and we've been able to see a broad overview, and the term seems to be in the building 30,000 feet. I've heard 35,000 feet. Do you have in place a plan at a little lower elevation? In my days, long ago, we had an overall schedule of events and then a flow chart. Could you show us a plan that's a little bit closer to the ground?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that. We have a detailed plan. It's well over 100 pages, which I didn't want to toss on you here today, but we'd be happy to share that with you. It's also available on our intranet site, so I would be happy to provide that.
Okay.
And if you would like, if it would be your desire to do so, I'd be happy to bring the project manager in, and we could walk through the plan with you at some point.
Myself, I'd like to see it first. Is there, before we run 100 pages, is anybody else interested?
I can look on intranet, too, so I'll do that.
I think it would be interesting to have Mike and maybe the project manager come in and talk a little bit about the, I'm sort of a visual learner, but talk a little bit about the overall business plan, the development of it, and then where they're going with it. If that's something that would please the chair, because I think that's something that then, you know, helps us really grasp where the, you know, for example, the key milestones that he's talked about and what the deliverables are and that sort of thing. Get this committee real. We had that same presentation at the joint legislative committee as well, but I don't think the members of this committee have had the advantage of that. And
I think you're going to hold over. So
I think I am. So I think that it would be, you know, might be something that you might, that the chair might find, and the rest of the committee might find worthwhile.
I'd like a paper copy of the plan up front so I could read through it. And Representative Burley, carefully. And two and the rest of us, I guess, will go. Representative Worth, you'd like a paper plan?
Yeah.
Please. So three of us, and we have two techos and three dummies. I'd like to mark mine up. but thank you very much, Mike. Are there any other questions? Excuse me. Thank you. Mr. Freeze from the Department of Administration.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? If not, next we have Jessica Stevens. And Jessica, for the record, I'm sure you'll identify yourself.
Certainly. Chair Dallum and members of the committee, my name is Jessica Stevens, and I'm an organizer with SEIU Local 503, Oregon Public Employees Union, and we represent many of the employees in IRMD who are going to be impacted by these changes. First, I just want to address the workers that we're dealing with in this particular project. If there is any group of state employees who actually embrace change and depend upon technological advances, it is these members and these employees of IRMD. Obviously, their jobs and their ability to provide the best services to state agencies and to the public depends upon having these technologies. And so these are folks who are quite comfortable and quite used to the concept of changes in this field. Our concerns stem mainly from the lack of information and the lack of sharing and our questions around how things are going to proceed. There are a lot of savings that have been claimed will come off of, as Mr. Freeze spoke, either job eliminations or work displacement or employee displacement. And so we've been given no clear picture of how that's going to work. And I do want to say to the agency's credit, there are going to be some work groups that are developing. So I want to say with a caveat, we're very hopeful that I think they begin to meet on the 3rd, that in those work groups we're going to get answers to a lot of the questions we've been asking over the last 6 months or so. So we look forward to that process and hope that we'll address it. But we have a lot of general concerns that I just wanted to flag for folks at this point. In particular, there are questions that we feel haven't been asked of Accenture or answered by Accenture. One of the flags that we see is that Accenture actually acknowledges they've never done a project of this magnitude before. And so we have some questions about their capabilities and what our confidence should be that this can actually be completed. We've obviously seen places where Accenture has been unable to implement projects for states. Florida had contracted with Accenture and they had since canceled their contract. In Connecticut, they were in charge of a payroll project where they were cutting checks for $4 million versus $2,000, and there were problems on and on and on. And obviously, there are issues that happen and problems and sometimes in the computer world, seemingly unexplainable problems that happen. But we have a lot at stake here, and obviously, Oregon is in a place where financially, we don't have a lot of money to put at risk. And so we have questions and concerns about the process, about Accenture's ability, about Accenture's reputation. You know, formerly Anderson Consulting, which has now offshored itself to Bermuda. So we have concerns about what would happen in the future on down the line in terms of a continuing relationship with this private entity that does not base itself here in Oregon. We have questions about the data center itself, the physical structure, the physical size, the concept that it's unclear how many employees are going to be required to actually maintain the system, what equipment will be required to maintain the system, and yet plans are going ahead for building design and building development. And the agency doesn't seem to be able to either answer those questions or share that information with us. We have concerns about which workers will actually be impacted by the changes. And part of that stems not just from data management that the center would address, but also from, as we've seen budget cuts over particularly the last 6 years, a lot of the work that is done by our members goes well beyond database management and information management. And there are a lot of other IRMD projects that our members do helping other agencies. And so if certain workers were just laid off or just moved from, you know, this work to working in the data center, there's a lot of other work that is required to maintain agency day-to-day business that either would not get done, or additional employees would need to be hired to continue to do that work, or non-IRMD employees would need to be trained to learn how to do that work as well. So this is just a short list of some of the highlights of some of our bigger concerns around the project. We've had some great success working with the state in terms of dramatic changes of work duties of our members, and even in situations of contracting out. We haven't felt like this project in particular is one where there's been an approach of having workers at the table and the folks who actually do the frontline projects having their input respected and sharing information with us. So we're very hopeful that as we move forward, especially with this work group project, that those questions will be answered. But it's hard for us to even begin to be helpful in the process if we don't even know which workers, how many workers, where these savings are actually going to come from, and all the other various details that either we're just trusting Accenture and going forward on, or someone has and isn't sharing with us. So, yeah. Thank you.
Chairman Dellum, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Green. I'm from the Employment Department, and I am the Assistant Internet Administrator for that department. I have sat before this committee before, all new faces, and have given testimony in the past regarding Scenic Project. I sit here as a representative of SEIU, and was very reluctant about coming up here this afternoon and giving testimony. And the reason why, primarily, is because we don't have a solid business case at this time. The business case is not final. We're operating, we're planning, we're implementing designs under a business case that's not even a final product yet. So in my eyes, I'm thinking, to give my testimony to you can be refuted because there is nothing in that has been solidified to operate against. As you can see by Mike's presentation, the final business case is supposed to be finalized second quarter 2005. As an employee and as a representative of the agencies, this is not a quasi-committee that's being put together. This is the entire state of Oregon's data. This is everything that will impact every citizen that utilizes the services from the state. Anything goes wrong, we got a big problem on our hands. We want this project to be very successful, and in being successful, we are raising very hard questions. We're raising questions about the functions of staff. We're raising questions about the technical complexities involved by integrating 12 separate entities into one consolidated project. It's very complex. It requires very methodical thinking and analysis. It requires the experts in the field who are conducting these services today. They need to be brought in, and they are being brought in now during the technical work groups, which is going to kick off on the 3rd at the Employment Department Auditorium. This is a good thing. This is where the people will get together in various subgroups and start designing the architecture for the Consolidated Network Center. However, as part of the SEIU and part of the bargaining team, of which this process is in bargaining right now, we had some very strong questions and needed some information regarding the staffing of this project. Who is affected? Who's affected by this process so that we can make sure that they get a fair shake, make sure that they're fully represented, make sure that everything is equitable across the table and work collaboratively so that we all can feel very successful and buy in on this process. We haven't gotten that. We did get some numbers, but the numbers have fractions to them, 1.8, 3.5. I don't know how many humans are a 0.5, but their functions identified in there. We need to know who the people are so that we can go back to them and say, you're affected. Here's what we're doing for you so that we can help you get retraining so that you can be more competitive in applying for these new positions or brush up on some skills. But we can't do that because we do not have any names associated with these numbers. So therefore, we have to hit everybody because we don't know who's impacted. And leaving it to chance like that means that if I may not be impacted, but I don't know if I want to stay with state government and I leave, but I'm not impacted, or I take training funds and I'm not affected. So there's resources that could be misallocated. What I'm pointing to here is if we know who the people are, then we can target these folks who are affected and then provide them the tools necessary to be on the competitive edge to work for our data center, because we do want the best and brightest, as it's been spoken out. Mr. Fleming has said we want the best and brightest. Well, we can get the best and brightest, but we need to know who these people are so that we can get them on the competitive edge. We have some very strong concerns about this. My last testimony was to ask to have the process slowed down a little bit. That's not going to happen. It's going to be more aggressive, so we have to change tracks and be more aggressive in line with the governor in cost savings. So we're concerned, and we want to bring to your attention that we're trying to work diligently and collaboratively with Daz and with Mike and with Don and with the leaders of the project so that we can make sure that we have equitable transition for the staff and the members of the SEIU, AFSCME, and anyone else who may be impacted by this process.
Is that it, Mr. Green? Thank you very much. Thank you, Jessica. Are there any questions from any members of the committee? Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of the different briefings we've gotten are talking about training, the retraining of the additional training provided that they will provide for the employees that are existing after the consolidation. And I know that there's an emphasis on outsourcing or contracting out for some services, so a lot of flexibility in the high degree of technology that they need to do these projects at one given time or another. So I'm wondering if you, given you know the level of technical expertise in your colleagues, what kind of training would be possible that the state could, I mean, could we possibly train a certain percentage of those in IRMD now to be maybe a quick response team, provide a high level of training to these folks and to avoid some of the outsourcing in the future? Or is that possible?
Chairman Dellum, Representative Worth, we have been in contact with the folks from the Dislocated Worker Program and the Rapid Response Team in respects to funds available to provide training and retraining. And one of the things in our line of work is we really need targeted, directed type of skill set and training. And whereas trying to train somebody, if I can give you an analogy, to configure a Cisco router and become certified to do that, we're talking literally months and maybe years to get that kind of certification. We don't have that kind of time available for us. If I do this kind of work at my office, and in order for me to be competitive to work at the data center, there may be facets of my job that I need to just zero in on. And if there's funding available or training services available from vendors and companies out there that can provide that high performance training, may give me that competitive edge to where I could be more successful or a more successful candidate for the data center. Did that answer that?
That's great, actually. Can I follow up?
Yes, Senator.
And we've been told that a large percentage, majority of the cost savings is going to be coming from reduction in personnel. And so I'm just wondering from you all, what are you looking at in terms of your estimates of reduction in personnel? Do they agree with what DAS is projecting, and what kind of attrition are you looking at for your workforce, estimating with this consolidation?
Chairman Dellum, Representative Worth, we have looked at a couple of routes on this. One is an attrition report. How many people are retiring that are in technology 1 to 5 years from now? It's quite large, actually, that are eligible for retiring. That's our industry knowledge right there. Probably one of the ways that we looked at this was, can we do the same cost savings through attrition versus actually laying off an employee from a department? Can we still get the same cost savings realized by doing that? We don't know. We don't know if it's even been examined or explored yet. We're not sure how many people are going to be displaced. We only know a number of how many people are estimated to reside in the data center.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't know how many people would be displaced as a result of the process.
Okay. Final question, Mr. Chair.
Do you follow up?
I'm looking at, the whole motivation here is that we have, better services at a lower cost and the same level of service at a lower cost. And I can understand the reduction in cost will come from reduced personnel, and that higher technology or better technology allows you to do the same amount of work with fewer people. But the component I'm not sure about is that, we're going to be able to provide better, if not the same service, if not better. And how exactly are we going to do that? I mean, what kind of training are we going to provide those employees that are left? I haven't been able to really get a handle on what kind of employee training is being proposed, and the timeline for you, if it's adequate, or Do you have those kind of details? And if not, do you have specifics on what you think these workers, the remaining workers, need to get to provide better service?
Chairman Dellum, Representative Worth, I do not have those numbers. If you are talking about those who are affected and are potentially to be laid off, are these the folks that you are?
I was talking about the remaining workers.
The main workers. So I guess I'm not quite understanding your question. Sure.
I think that Chair Dallum, Representative Worth, I think that part of our struggle is that we actually don't know which workers or what the process will be in determining which workers either leave through attrition, get laid off, get to stay, or how that's going to work in terms of different workers have different skill sets within those that are currently with the agency. And we're also, we're very interested in the process of training, and I think we need to work together with management to try to figure out based on what the new system is going to look like, here are the skill sets of those folks that are going to be employed. This is the training that would need to happen. These are the timelines that we have to work on. And I really think that we need to sit down and have those conversations before we could answer your question, because I think it's really absolutely critical to know the answer to that.
Okay, so you haven't had those conversations.
That's right. We've made those requests, but we don't have the answers.
Okay.
Representative Crumb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was made a comment about an information sharing group and that it was going to be meeting soon. Can you tell me a little bit more about about that and the meeting and sort of what you anticipate coming out of that?
Chairman Dallum, Representative Crummell, there are two types of committees that are working. One is a conglomerate of technical work groups. They will specialize in architecture, networking, security, these pieces. That's one conglomeration. And then there's another group that will be formulating, which is called a peer communications network or peer communications work group. Is that the one that you were?
I think that's the one that I was wondering about, yes.
The peer communications work group is a group of folks who will be getting together, and this is being chartered by the CIO group right now. They're chartering it to give us a structure. This is to get us direct pipelines into these individual technical work groups.
Okay.
Hopefully, it's my vision that this group is going to have members of these subgroups so that we can take inquiries, questions, input, feedback directly back to the working technical groups and get information back quickly to disseminate that throughout the rest of the IT population, if you will, with the rest of the departments. The technical groups are going to be charged with, on February 3rd, they're going to be charged with coming up with designs that are specific for their part of the whole consolidation effort. And then the communication piece is going to be another venue of getting information back and forth, which is one of the challenges that we have right now, is getting timely information back to the technical staff regarding the process of the project, where things are, where can I submit my questions, I have concerns about this, or simply this is not going to work as it is designed right now. So we can get a better pipeline to the leaders of the project and to those work groups. And hopefully this will be a very effective communication tool. I'm working with Mike and Ray Lynn Henson right now to start putting that together.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Yes, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure you're concerned about where's this business plan. I've asked several times, and it's out there, and it's still being worked on. At some point in time, I think we'll see it. But do you think that with a business plan, how much of your specific concerns do you think that'll be able to address, or will there still be some gaps of information that you'll need?
Chairman Dallum, Representative Burley, the business plan gives us a complete picture of what's going to happen. And one of the things that we talk about, too, amongst the folks that I live and work with every day is the scope. It's a moving target. And with the business plan, hopefully it's going to corral all these other moving things like the scope and the funds that are going to be saved and what kind of resources are going to be needed to run a successful data center. And it's a concern for shared amongst some of us folks about the business plan and that it is not there now. We're building a building and we don't have a final business case. And these are the things that we're concerned about. Well, just exactly what kind of money are we looking at savings? We all want to save money. We all wear multiple hats. We're so slim on resources right now in the IT field that we have to carry on three or four different projects just to keep things running. And we want to make sure that services provided to the state of Oregon is at the same level or even better through consolidated efforts. And I do believe that we're going to save money through this, but what kind of money are we going to save? And how are we going to save that? And is it detailed? I've read the 100-page detailed implementation plan, and it's about, to me, in my opinion, it's a 10,000-foot view of what's going on. Now, you may see it at lower altitude, but that's kind of where I see it, and some of my colleagues share that same insight on that. The business case and the business plan is going to give us a real living document that is a solid frame for us to operate in, and we really know where we're going with it. I understand due to the complexity of this whole project, you just can't make that happen overnight. It's too complex. It's too big. And I know that the folks are doing what they can to make that a solid process for us, a solid project, solid document. But it's what we have to operate with, and we don't have that yet.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And it's a concern.
Oh, excuse me.
Thank you.
Did you get your answer, Representative? Representative Roblin, you have a question?
I mean, yeah, to follow up a little bit on Representative Burley's question, do you see these work group that's starting on the 3rd as being a place where you can get input into the business plan before it's actually produced, or do you see a point at which employees could get input into the business plan?
Chairman Dolan, Representative Roblin, that is a very, very good question. These technical work groups are going to be so focused on their facet or their piece of the puzzle for this whole project. I don't know if that is going to help materialize the business case or the business plan into a solid living document. I don't know.
Yes, Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, when we say cost savings, when we upgrade technology, I'm reminded of the DHS reorganization and how it promised to save all this money, but really what we need is an IT is investment of money. So I was interested in what you said, that it was a moving target, that the annual cost savings that have been projected and the one-time cost. So we've been given the estimate of $5 million annual operating cost reduction per annual. And then the one-time costs investment was supposed to be in the range of $20 to $25 million, with not too much spent on training and redeployment and retraining. So are those the estimates that you're getting $5 million a year savings per year from the consolidation, and then the one-time cost of $20 to $25 million to make the consolidation move? Or have those figures changed dramatically?
Chairman Dolan, Representative Worth, the $25 million figure that you mentioned, I believe that the emergency board had granted a $20 million for the construction of the facility. And then an additional $5 million for security. Now, Mike would be more suitable to respond to that question, but the estimated $5 million annual savings is that. It's estimated. I have not personally seen the numbers that have been crunched to come up with that figure. I believe it's been asked, but we seem to not be successful in obtaining that information.
So yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. You haven't been given different numbers then. You just haven't been given.
No.
That's correct.
Okay.
That is correct. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Worth. Yes, Representative Worth.
We got a DHS briefing the other day, and part of that was a graph that they gave us of current skills and a pie chart. It didn't really give us percentages. It just showed a pie chart. And then it showed the new jobs on a pie chart a few pages later that showed totally different skills. Again, the big issue was we have COBOL developers, which was a large group, and the next group will be application package experts. Okay, but we look at those and we say they're about the same, but we don't, I couldn't get an understanding of, can the COBOL people get the training they need for the applications? Because if they could, then we'd be there. And I guess, is that the kinds of questions you're asking as well? And have you seen those same kinds of charts that explain the shift in needed skills with respect to employers, but without the description who those people are?
Chairman Dolan, Representative Roland, we have seen what kind of functions are going to be needed in the data center. We have seen numbers of how many people who will do mainframe application work, how many people are in network, security, application development. We've seen figures like that. I haven't seen a specific pie chart of how many folks, one-to-one ratio or anything like that.
Okay.
But I have seen those kind of numbers come
up. And ours don't really have numbers associated with them, even percentages by the pie chart. It's just relative size. So.
Relative.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Gerber. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much. And we're always glad to hear from you. Is there anyone else that would like to give public testimony?
Chair Allen, we just want to thank you for the time before the committee today.
Yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before you close off here, there's a couple of things that I was just kind of wondering about, and maybe Mike might want to respond to, or maybe he might not want to respond to. I don't know. Or give us something written later would be fine too. But the comment that Accenture has never done this type of a project.
Mr. Carl, can we give Mike a chance to get to the chair in case he decides to answer? Let's have him on the record.
I'm just curious about this because I happen to know that Accenture is one of the larger IT companies, not only in the country but in the world. The products and services that they provided tend to be very, very highly thought of, and so I'm just kind of curious about that. And along with that, I'm curious about one of the comments that was made also was that taking different types of processes, for example, what Department of Human Services does versus Department of Administrative Services or the Transportation Department and so on, and lumping those all together into one data center, and the concern about that. But yet, we have commercial data centers. There's a few of them over in Beaverton and Northwest Portland, and they have companies that utilize their data centers that are mom and pop, small, one, two person operations, all the way up to companies that have 500 plus employees and do hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues every year. And they don't seem to have a problem with the data centers being able to function and everyone's needs being able to be met. So I'm just kind of curious as to why it is that the state would be different in that respect, moving from 33 data centers that, you know, with all the computing stuff that the state does would fill a medium-sized data center. It seems to be a concern about those processes when in fact those You know, it happens all the time in the private market, and I don't know if Mike wants to respond to those questions or if that's something that he wants to respond later, but I'm just curious about it.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Mike Vries, Deputy State Chief Information Officer. Representative Crummell, I don't need to, and I won't stand here today and defend Accenture's record. They're more than capable of doing that. What I will say is that the very issues that have been raised here today have been raised, and the questions have been answered several times now. We have responded both directly to legislators who were inquired with those very same questions, and we have prepared a legislative briefing, which you should receive shortly, that deals with those issues. It is not true that Accenture states that they have not performed a consolidation or a project of this magnitude. They're one of the top five or six consulting firms in the world, especially in the IT arena. They do extensive work with government, and while no two consolidation projects are precisely identical, they have performed projects that are equal to or greater than this project in magnitude. I think possibly where the misconception may have come from is in a meeting with multiple state agency staff. The question was asked, have you done a project specifically like this one with 12 data centers and consolidating all the network infrastructure for a state government? And the answer is no. There is no project that looks exactly like this, but they have run projects that were more complicated and less complicated and similar or greater in magnitude. So that is not a concern for us. We went through an exhaustive process in selecting a vendor as a partner for this project. And I would back up for just a second and tell you that the initial solicitation document was put together in such a way that it precluded the vendor who did the analysis from participating in the execution phase of the project. And what that does is it excludes anybody who knows anything about data center consolidation from responding to the RFP, and in fact, that's precisely what we got as a response. That virtually ensures that the project will not be successful because the business case, one, has to be called into question, and secondly, the vendor that you bring in to help you with execution can't possibly trust the numbers that are produced by another vendor, so you pay for that twice. There is a risk associated with managing and using a single partner through the entire project, and we recognize that and have built in some processes in both the contract and in terms of negotiating subsequent phases that protect the state there. The second solicitation that we put out allowed that vendor to negotiate for the second phase of the contract, and we received responses from four world-class vendors who do this for a living. That's what they do. And so that procurement process was quite successful. A multi-agency committee is comprised of people from ODOT, Department of Human Services, Department of Administrative Services participated on the selection panel and overwhelmingly chose this particular vendor as a successful vendor. In terms of the responding to the question, why is it different in the state of Oregon? I don't think it is. I do think, though, that there's what we're dealing with here is a fundamental paradigm shift, and it's what I talked about before, that what we're doing flies in the face of the default culture in the state of Oregon, which is agency-centric. There are very legitimate concerns about the complexity of the project, which will be addressed at the appropriate point in the project, but they aren't reasons to stop and reconsider every decision that's been made to date. There are issues that have to be managed as we work forward in detailed planning and in execution, and we will do that as we progress through the project.
Thank you. Yeah. Are there any other questions? Yes.
Chairman, thank you. Mike, your presentation again on page 7 and on page 14 points out that the detailed implementation plan and final business case will be done fall-winter 2004. Whereas pointed out by a previous speaker, the end of the second quarter of 2005. Am I reading something wrong here? Detailed implementation plan and final business case. On page 6 says fall-winter 2004. I think that probably means winter of 2005, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, no. Actually, that was the original plan. And if you recall, when we presented the business case to the governor directed us to be more aggressive. That was when we inserted the stage zero process. And that is the process that was just concluded at the end of this last calendar year, which has reset the scope. This speaks to the comment that was made earlier about the scope seeming to wag around. Actually, what we did was we increased the scope to include additional computing infrastructure. That's why it's necessary to recycle the business case. Now, the original business case that I talked about earlier, the $5 million business case, we know that by increasing the scope, we will improve that business case. What I can't tell you right now today is what that number is, but it will be produced in accordance with the project schedule. And that's you'll see an update to that business case in the March-April time frame, and then a final one. And the purpose of that, that's our target. That's what we go after as we execute the plan, and that's what we measure against in terms of achieving savings.
Okay, so the financial model and updated business case we can expect in March or April.
Right.
And the final business case and cost impact by agency we can expect by when?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, that's currently scheduled for the end of the second quarter. It may be possible to produce that sooner, but that's what the project plan calls for, and that would be about the June time frame.
Well, I'd sure like to see that before we go sign and die.
Take care.
In the middle of May.
Yeah. You needn't apologize, Representative Willis. We're not leaving until all your questions are answered.
Thank you.
Okay, so can I ask you a question about the DHS, similar to Representative on down the line? There's a question on the graph about the staff skills. It was a DHS presentation, but I'm wondering specifically, we look at the vast majority of the new anticipated skills will be in regards to application package experts. So does that mean, are these in-house experts that are trained on different applications, or are we talking about hiring people from the vendors who are applications experts, or is it a mix of the two?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, I don't want to speak in great deal to DHS specific issues. I do happen to know something about that. I've talked with their CIO, Bill Crowell, about it. In that arena, what he's really talking about is repositioning to have a bias toward commercial off-the-shelf solutions where it's appropriate. And in that case, you need a different skill set than you would need if you're going to build applications mm-hmm. from the ground up with COBOL or with any other programming language. So what he's talking about is a shift in skill set from predominantly COBOL programmers to folks who are experts at really business integration and integrating commercial off-the-shelf software applications.
Mm-hmm.
And they would to execute a project, you would have a mix both of core agency staff and staff that would come from a vending community that was selling that software solution.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions for Mike while he's here? Again, thank you very much, Mike, for your time and the answers. Any other any others that would like to provide testimony? Because we do have testimony, we will not have any comment other than that. All questions are answered. We will not adjourn until Thursday. And I'll adjourn the meeting.